Good morning. I'm Nancy Williams, and I'm here for Petals and Prose today on the Zesty Garden. I'm going to be really brave and attempt to read from Henry David Thoreau's essay called Walking, which is a marvelous piece, but I realized when I started to review it that Henry David Thoreau wrote more like William Shakespeare, and so he's a challenge sometimes to read because occasionally his sentences run for half a page. So I will find out after we read this whether this is actually a doable thing or not. Just a little bit about Thoreau. He was born in Concord, Massachusetts in 1817 and died there on May 6, 1862. He was not very old when he died. But with the exception of brief periods of absence during his childhood and youth and excursions in adult years to the Maine woods and the White Mountains, Cape Cod, Quebec, and other localities, and one longer trip to Minnesota in 1861, trying to recover his health, Thoreau's whole life was spent within the borders of his native town of Concord. This was a distinction that he loved. "I cannot but regard it," he said, "as a kindness in those who have the steering of me, that by the want of pecuniary wealth I have been nailed down to this my native region so long and steadily, and made to study and love this spot of earth more and more. What would signify in comparison a thin and diffused love and knowledge of the whole earth instead got by wandering?" So he was plugged into the area around Concord and Walden Pond his entire life, and that is reflected in his reading. He opens his essay called Walking this way: "I wish to speak a word for nature, for absolute freedom and wildness, as contrasted with a freedom and culture merely civil, to regard man as an inhabitant or part and parcel of nature rather than a member of society. I wish to make an extreme statement, if so I may make an emphatic one, for there are enough champions of civilization. The minister and the school committee and every one of you will take care of that." Excerpted from his essay. "I think that I cannot preserve my health and spirits unless I spend 4 hours a day at least, and it's commonly more than that, sauntering through the woods and over the hills and fields, absolutely free from all worldly engagement. You may safely say a penny for your thoughts or 1,000 pounds. When sometimes I'm reminded that the mechanics and shopkeepers stay in their shops not only all the forenoon but all the afternoon too, sitting with crossed legs, so many of them, as if the legs were made to sit upon and not to stand or walk upon, I think that they deserve some credit for not having all committed suicide long ago. I, who cannot stay in my chamber for a single day without acquiring some rust, and when sometimes I have stolen forth for a walk at the 11th hour of 4 o'clock in the afternoon, too late to redeem the day, when the shades of night were already beginning to be mingled with the daylight, have felt as if I had committed some sin to be atoned for, I confess that I am astonished at the power of endurance, to say nothing of the moral insensibility of my neighbors who confine themselves to shops and offices the whole day long for weeks and months, aye, and years almost together. I know not what manner of stuff they are of, sitting there now at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, as if it were 3 o'clock in the morning. Bonaparte may talk of the 3 o'clock in the morning courage, but it is nothing to the courage which can sit down cheerfully at this hour in the afternoon over against oneself, whom you've known all the morning, to starve out a garrison to whom you are bound by such strong ties of sympathy. I wonder that about this time, or say between 4 and 5 o'clock in the afternoon, too late for the morning papers and too early for the evening ones, there is not a general explosion heard up and down the street, scattering a legion of antiquated and house-bred notions and whims to the four winds for an airing, and so the evil cure itself. How womankind who are confined to the house still more than men stand it, I do not know, but I have ground to suspect that most of them do not stand it at all. when early in a summer afternoon we've been shaking the dust of the village from the skirts of our garments, making haste past those houses with purely Doric or Gothic fronts, which have such an air of repose about them. My companion whispers that probably about these times their occupants are all gone to bed. Then it is that I appreciate the beauty and the glory of architecture, which itself never turns in, but forever stands out and erect, keeping watch over the slumberers. No doubt temperament, and above all age, have a good deal to do with it. As a man grows older, his ability to sit still and follow indoor occupations increases. He grows vespertinal in his habits as the evening of life approaches, till at last he comes forth only just before sundown and gets all the walk that he requires in half an hour. But the walking of which I speak has nothing in it akin to taking exercise, as it is called, as the sick take medicine at stated hours, as the swinging of dumbbells or chairs, but is itself the enterprise and adventure of the day. If you would get exercise, go in search of the springs of life. Think of man's swinging dumbbells for his health when those springs are bubbling up in far-off pastures unsought by him. Moreover, you must walk like a camel, which is said to be the only beast which ruminates when walking. When a traveler asked Wordsworth's servant to show him her master's study, she answered, "Here is his library, but his study is out of doors." When we walk, we naturally go to the fields and woods. What would become of us if we walked only in a garden or a mall? Even some sects of philosophers have felt the necessity of importing the woods to themselves, since they didn't go to the woods. They planted groves and walks, where they took subdialis ambulations in porticos open to the air. Of course, it is of no use to direct our steps in the woods. If they do not carry us thither, I am alarmed when it happens that I've walked a mile into the woods bodily without getting there in spirit. In my afternoon walk, I would fain forget all my morning occupations and my obligations to society, but it sometimes happens that I can't easily shake off the village. The thought of some work will run in my head, and I am not where my body is. I am out of my senses. In my walks, I would fain return to my senses. What business have I in the woods if I am thinking of something out of the woods? I suspect myself and cannot help a shudder when I find myself so implicated even in what are called good works, for this may sometimes happen. My vicinity offers many good walks, and though for so many years I've walked almost every day and sometimes for several days together, I've not yet exhausted them. An absolutely new prospect is a great happiness, and I can still get this any afternoon. 2 or 3 hours walking will carry me to as strange a country as I expect ever to see. A single farmhouse which I had not seen before is sometimes as good as the dominions of the King of Dahomey. There is, in fact, a sort of harmony discoverable between the capabilities of the landscape within a circle of 10 miles radius or the limits of an afternoon walk, and the 80 years and 10 of human life. It will never become quite familiar to you. Nowadays, almost all of man's improvements, so-called, as the building of houses and the cutting down of the forest and all large trees, simply deform the landscape and make it more and more tame and cheap. A people who would begin by burning the fences and let the forest stand. I saw the fences half consumed, their ends lost in the middle of the prairie, and some worldly miser with a surveyor looking after his bounds while heaven had taken place around him, and he did not see the angels going to and fro, but he was looking for an old post hole in the middle of paradise. I looked again and saw him standing in the middle of a boggy Stygian fen, surrounded by devils, and he had found his bounds without a doubt. 3 little stones where a stake had been driven, and looking nearer, I saw that the Prince of Darkness was his surveyor. I can easily walk 10, 15, 20, any number of miles, commencing at my own door without going by any house, without crossing a road except where the fox and the mink do, first along by the river, and then the brook, and then the meadow and the woodside. There are square miles in my vicinity which have no inhabitant. From many a hill I can see civilization and the abodes of man afar. The farmers and their works are scarcely more obvious than woodchucks in their burrows. Man and his affairs, church and state and school, trade and commerce, and manufactures and agricultures, even politics, the most alarming of them all, I am pleased to see how little space they occupy in the landscape. Politics is but a narrow field, and that still narrower highway yonder leads to it. I sometimes direct the traveler thither. If you would go to the political world, follow that great road. Follow that market man. Keep his dust in your eyes, and it will lead you straight to it. For it, too, has its place merely and does not occupy all space. I pass from it as from a bean field into the forest, and it is forgotten. In 1/2 hour I can walk off to some portion of the earth's surface where a man does not stand from 1 year's end to another, and there, consequently, politics are not, for they are but as the cigar smoke of a man. And that's the end of that little excerpt from Henry David Thoreau's essay called Walking. Hope you enjoyed it. I just love it. I will see you next time. This is Nancy Williams for Petals and Prose.